Welcome to Mondays with Miles. A few weeks ago, we discussed preliminary APR data, but one thing we didn't discuss is the performance of our historically black colleges and universities. Dr. Brand, what's the position on these schools?
I think many, not all, but many of the HBCUs in general over the last several years, and I don't know if it'll change that much in the next year or two, have seen lower average APR scores. That's frankly not unexpected because it is related to the financial ability of those institutions to support their student athletes. We frankly see the same phenomena in non-HBCU institutions that are urban, for example, that have a relatively low per student support mechanism. And so the support available to the general student body and also to the athletes makes it more difficult for them to get the kind of support, tutoring, facility use, computers that they need for success.
When you talk about some of those challenges, you know, we have a penalty-based structure if certain numbers aren't met. What is our stance going to be with these schools? Are we going to have exceptions?
We're not going to have exceptions so much as we're going to have criteria that take into account the support per student. So it's a number of the HBCUs, but it isn't just them. As I mentioned, it's other low-support students, low-support institutions in Division I. And we'll take that into account in determining what the APR cut lines are for each of those schools. We're also working with our board in order to provide some modest but important additional support to those schools, both the HBCUs that need it as well as the urban institutions, to provide the support for the student athletes. For example, student advising. We might find in one of the larger conferences, a student advisor only has to deal with maybe 30 to 50 students, but in one of these institutions, a student advisor has to deal with 200 or more students. And so those particular students are getting less advice and assistance in being able to meet the academic requirements that they face. And we have to bring that into account. We still expect our student athletes to graduate, and we expect them in all institutions to do well, at least as well as the general student body. But we need to tailor our criteria more specifically. It isn't one shoe fits all.
Is this an issue with the haves and the have-nots with regard to the student bodies or just the student athlete populations?
Both, because the ability to support student athletes is not that much different from the ability to support the general student body. So if you're in a school that has the resources to support the general student body, the student athletes will be supported too. But if you're in a resource-deprived institution that doesn't have the resources it needs to work with the general student body, the student athletes aren't going to be able to do much better. They are of a piece. Now, we want to help the student athletes as much as we can, and again, we'll try and find some matching grants or other support mechanisms so that these particular institutions can do better with their student athletes. But it's always going to be a struggle for the athletes to do much better than the general student body.
It seems to me that it takes more resources to succeed athletically at the Division I level than it may at the Division II or Division III level. Are HBCUs and other low support institutions competing at the right division of the NCAA?
Well, it's a good question. Each institution has to decide what level it wants to compete at. They may find that in Division I they're going to see more revenue coming in for TV contracts and larger fan base audiences paying for tickets, or they may not. I think each institution, and institutions, of course, are made up, go to make up conferences, so each conference has to decide what's the best level of support. I wouldn't say in general there's a particular problem with HBCUs. I think they've decided, and probably so, on what their level of competition is. I do worry, on the other hand, about some institutions who are in Division II thinking that they can move up to Division I without any problem at all. They neglect the difficulty both academically and athletically to do so and the amount of support that's necessary. And they may go from a winning Division II position to a losing Division I position, lose their fan base, find out they don't have enough academic support or enough resources for the facilities and so on. So I worry a lot about the movement from 2 to 1, but those are particularly the HBCUs who are in Division I, I think, made a decision, and properly so, where they belong.
It sounds as if we'll continue to monitor this.
We will continue to monitor it very closely.
All right, an interesting conversation. Thanks so much.
You bet.